Today, I will give you a profound talk from Samyutta Nikaya, Nidana Samyutta, about the four nutriments. It's a very important sutta and very important teaching. The title of this sutta is called Sanskrit. It's all concerning the four nutriments, which we should know. So the sutta starts at Savati. Now you can see the sutta. Because there are these four kinds of nutriments for the maintenance of beings that have already come to be, and for the existence of those about to come to be. What for? The nutriment, edible food, clothes or supper. Second, contact. Third, mental volition. Fourth, consciousness. These are the four kinds of nutriment for the maintenance of beings that have already come to be, and for the existence of those about to come to be. So for those beings that have already come to be, like us, we have already come to this world. So there are these four things maintain us in this world. And for those about to come to be, who are they? Who are they, those about to come to be? Those still in mother's womb, not yet come out from mother's womb. And those who are egg born. Like egg born, like chicken, not yet come out from the cell, it's called those about to come to be. And how bhikkhus should the nutriment edible food be seen? Suppose a couple, husband and wife, had taken limited provisions and were traveling to a desert. They had with them their only son, dear and beloved. Then, in the middle of the desert, their limited provisions would be used up and exhausted, while the rest of the desert remains to be crossed. The husband and wife would think, our limited provisions have been used up and exhausted, while the rest of this desert remains to be crossed. Let us cure our only son, dear and beloved, and prepare dry and spiced meat. By eating our son's flesh, we can cross the rest of this desert. Let not all three of us perish. Then bhikkhus, the husband and wife, would cure their only son, dear and beloved, prepare dry and spiced meat, and by eating their son's flesh, they would cross the rest of the desert. While they are eating their son's flesh, they would beat their breast and cry, where are you, our only son? Where are you, our only son? What do you think, bhikkhus? Would they eat that food for amusement, or for enjoyment, or for the sake of physical beauty and attractiveness? No, Venerable Sir. Wouldn't they eat that food only for the sake of crossing the desert? Yes, Venerable Sir. It is in such a way, because that I say the nutriment edible food should be seen. So Buddha tried to convey a message when we eat, partake the food, especially for monks and nuns. We should assume we are eating our own flesh, our own son's flesh. So when you eat, you imagine you are eating your son's flesh. Can you enjoy the food? You can't. So then why should you eat the food? Why? For the maintenance of the body. So that you can practice the wholesomeness. You can practice the spiritual path. So we eat this food not for amusement, not for enjoyment, not for physical beauty, but for the maintenance for our life. So that we can remain alive, then we can do all the wholesome, all the good things, and we can practice the teaching and the meditation and to get rid of all the refinements in our mind. So Buddha said, in such a way, because that I say the nutriment edible food should be seen. So whenever you try, because most people when they eat without mindfulness. They eat as much as they can without reflection. So if you eat something without reflection, then you become the slave of your greed. So Buddha encouraged us to eat with right reflection. Then when a nutriment, edible food, is fully understood, lust for the five courts of sensual pleasures is fully understood. I would like to explain in detail according to the commentary. How the nutriment edible food is fully understood. Food is made up by four elements. If you can practice four elements meditation systematically, you discern the food. When the food go into your mouth, so you feel the hardness of the food. What is that element? Earth element. Then you feel the heat, hot of the food. Fire element. So when you chew, when you chew the water, the food, the liquid comes out from the food. What is that element? Water element. And when you swallow, the food being pushed down. What element? Air element or wind element. And if you listen to the food, you can see the food only composed of four elements. And this food touches the tongue sensitivity. What is this tongue sensitivity? Tongue sensitivity we call derived materiality. In Abhidhamma we have 28 kinds of materiality. The four great elements plus 24 derived materiality which arise depend on the four elements. So the tongue sensitivity arise depend on the four elements. So if you can discern the food is composed of four elements and the tongue sensitivity is also the tongue sensitivity, another word we call tongue transparent element. So if you can discern the tongue, if you can practice four elements, you discern the tongue, when the concentration becomes deep, you will see there are many particles arising and passing away around your tongue. In each particle, there are eight elements. We call Patari, Apo, Tejo, Vayo, Vanna, Gandha, Rasa, Osha. Earth element, fire, earth, water, fire, wind, color, smell, taste, nutritive action, and plus one, life faculty. And the last one, tongue transparent element. So we have 10 nerves in each particle around the tongue. There are so many tongue sensitivity there. So you can see when the food touches the tongue, that particle, the tongue sensitivity becomes very sensitive towards this taste. And then you recognize this is called tongue sensitivity. Then if you analyze in this way, you understand the whole tongue sensitivity is only arise depend on the four elements. It's the transparency of the four elements. Why is called tongue sensitivity or tongue transparent element? It's the transparency of the four elements. That's why it's called tongue transparent element or tongue sensitivity. So if you can discern in this way, then you understand materiality. Then when the food comes to contact with the tongue, there is contact, mental aggregate of contact. And you feel the taste. Then there is feeling, mental factors of feeling. Then you perceive, oh, this is sour taste, sweet taste, bitter taste. So there's perception, perceive different kinds of taste. And there's consciousness, tongue consciousness, arise knowing the tongue. So if you can listen in this way, you understand it's only mind and matter. Mind and matter. Matter is food for element of the tongue, and the mind is contact, feeling, perception, and consciousness. So if you can listen in this way, this is called full understanding of the known. Full understanding of the known by discerning mind and matter. In Pali we call Nyata Parinya. Nyata Parinya. After that, then you start to search the conditions for this mind and matter. Why they arise? For example, why contact arise? Why feeling arise? Why craving arises? You start to investigate why. So why contact arises? Because of the food, impinges the tongue sensitivity, that cause consciousness, tongue consciousness to arise. So this is called contact. Then, because of contact, then feeling arises, pleasant feeling. When the food, the light you like. Then pleasant feeling. When the food has disagreeable food come to contact with your tongue, you have unpleasant feeling. Then you start to investigate, why unpleasant feeling arise? Why pleasant feeling arise? Because of different types of food come to contact with the tongue. Then when it's pleasant feeling, then craving arises. When it's unpleasant taste, then unpleasant feeling arises, and then followed by aversion to that type of taste. So you understand, craving arises because of feeling. Feeling arises because of contact. Contact arises because of food comes to touch with the tongue sensitivity. So you start a search for the cause and condition for the mind and body. This is called full understanding of investigation. Tirana parinya. Then after that, then you start to discern. Contact is also impermanent. Feeling is also impermanent. I don't know how you take your food. When you take your lunch or dinner, I don't know whether you observe all this type of feeling or not. You will see feeling arise, pass away. Arise, pass away. Sometimes pleasant, sometimes unpleasant feeling, sometimes neutral feeling. So many different types of feeling when different types of taste come to contact with the tongue. And you can see the feeling keep on arising, passing away, and sometimes craving arises, sometimes aversion arises. There are so many mental phenomena keep on arising and passing away when you are taking your meal. So if you can discern arising and passing away, it's called impermanence. impermanence of feelings, impermanence of craving. Then after that, when you see the student keep on arising, passing away, you feel a type of oppression, being oppressed by repeated arising and passing away. Then when you feel being oppressed by repeated arising and passing away, you feel a sense of unsatisfactory, undesirable, unsatisfactory, we call dukkha in Pali. The translate as suffering. Then you also understand all this occur because of cause and effect. Only cause and effect, cause and effect. There's no I, no mind, no myself. And when you can realize in this way, you become disenchanted with your feelings. You become disenchanted with all the whole process of eating. When you become disenchanted towards the feeling, let's say, towards the feeling, then your mind becomes dispassionate. Your mind no more attached to that feeling. When you are no more attached to that feeling, then it comes to a cessation. It comes to a cessation of that feeling. Not feeling stop, doesn't mean feeling stop. You no more cling to that feeling, no more attached to that feeling. You simply eat to maintain your body. You don't have the craving to the food anymore. This is called Tirana Parinya, full understanding of investigation. Then as you keep on going, you will reach a point that you will reach a point that you will attain, according to what Buddha says, you will attain anagami, non-returning. And number third is called full understanding of abandonment. So when you reach this third stage, full understanding of abandonment, then you reach anagami stage, the stage of non-returning. So the Buddha said, when the nutriment edible food is fully understood, the last for the five courts of sensual pleasures is fully understood. When last for the five courts of sensual pleasures is fully understood, there is no factor bound by which a noble disciple might come back again to this world. So the last sentence, there's no factor bound by which a noble disciple might come back again to this world. This sentence refers to the attainment of non-returning, anagami. Okay, another way to explain, when the nutriment edible food is fully understood, last for the five courts of sensual pleasures is fully understood. Just now I have explained to you by three ways. By the full understanding of the known, second, full understanding of investigation, the three, full understanding of abandonment. Abandon the great. Okay. Now there's another explanation according to the commentary. How can the nutriment edible food is fully understood, then the last for the five courts of sensual pleasure is fully understood. So when the food touches the tongue, we have last for the taste. So also when the agreeable visible object impinges the eye, there is last for the visible object. When a sound, there's last of visible object, and the visible object and the eye sensitivity belong to materiality, and the contact, seeing the object, visible object is contact, and the feelings towards that visible object, whether you like, whether it's pleasant feeling or unpleasant. That is pleasant feeling, craving arises, and you want more and more. So this is called mental aggregate. So you understand mind and body, then you contemplate, your feeling as impermanent, craving as impermanent. This is called full understanding of investigation. Then as you keep on going, finally you reach the full understanding of abandonment. So by understanding the taste, we also understand the visible object, the last for the visible object, the last for the sound, the last for the smell, the last for the bodily touch. Okay, that's why Buddha says when the nutriment, edible food is fully understood, last for the five core substantial traces, is fully understood. Then when the food itself, when we partake the food itself, there are also five sense desires. For example, when your eye looks at the food, the good appearance, bright appearance of the food, then the last or visible food to the eye. And when you look before you eat, you look at the food. The food is well prepared, different color. So the moment you look at the food, the visible object, the food, impinges your eye sensitivity, then there's a contact. Then very pleasant feeling arises because the food is well prepared. So that's last for the visible food. The last for the visible object. Okay. Then the food, you take the food inside your mouth, then you chew. The sound come out, Then you hear the sound. Then there's a last for the sound. And when the food touch your tongue, there's a pleasant feeling. So there's last for the tongue, for the taste. And before you eat, there's good smell. Cook, the food has good smell. So when the smell touch your nose sensitivity, there is a pleasant feeling. Then there's a last for the smell. And when you are chewing the soft food, soft is tangible object. So there's a last for the tangible object. So during eating, although we know we recognize only eating, but the five sense last. The five types of last for the five sense objects are included here. So when you start, every time when you start your meal, you should remember what you have learned now. Don't just simply eat without knowing anything. Simply eat just knowing good taste, that's all. It is so then not enough for you to develop wisdom. You have to follow what the Buddha taught just now. There are so many dharma inside during your eating process. If you can be mindful and using the wisdom to contemplate impermanence, non-self, and the whole process, then your wisdom develops by leaps and bounds. Okay? And also here say, when a nutriment edible food is fully understood, last for the five core substantial process is fully understood. When the five sense desire thrive when a person is well fed. So in Sri Lanka, because food stimulates, the food stimulates five sense desires. In Sri Lanka, long time ago, there was famine. It's called famine. No food. Famine. So during famine, wife and husband, never look at each other with last for 12 years. After famine, there come a day. There's a last festival celebrate the newborn baby, full in the whole Sri Lanka. You got the meaning? So when people are well fed, then other last the lust for other things desire, the lust for other things also increase. When you are hungry, no, there's no lust. No lust for other things object. Because you are hungry. You only want to fit your stomach. You don't have other thoughts. Lust for sex, lust for seeing, lust for hearing good. No, you don't have all this lust when you are so hungry. When you are in, when during the swimming, afternoon. But when you are well fed, you know, oh, then you start, your eyes start lust for visible objects, your body lust for sexual, you know, sexual contact and so on. So food, So that's why Buddha said when the nutriment edible food is fully understood, the lust for the five courts of sensual pleasures is fully understood. Okay. Now we come to the second one. And how bhikkhus should the nutriment contact be seen? Suppose there's a flay cow. If she stands exposed to a wall, the creatures dwelling in the wall would nibble at her. If she stands exposed to a tree, the creatures dwelling in the tree would nibble at her. If she stands exposed to water, the creatures dwelling in the water would nibble at her. If she stands exposed to the open air, the creatures dwelling in the open air would nibble at her. Whatever that flay cow stands exposed to, the creatures dwelling there would nibble at her. It is in such a way, bhikkhus, that I say the nutriment contact should be seen. When the nutriment contact is fully understood, the three kinds of feeling are fully understood. Okay. So this cow, wherever she stands, all the creatures will nibble at her. So this is like contact. Our eye, our sixth sense door, keep on exposed to the contact. For example, eye exposed to the contact of visible object, ear exposed to the contact of sound, nose exposed to the contact of smell, tongue exposed to the contact of taste, body exposed to the contact of tangible object. Whenever there's contact, there is craving, there's feeling. Wherever there's contact, there's pleasant feeling. Most of time, pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling. So when there's feeling, then there's craving. When there's craving, there's clinging. So all the defilements come through the six contacts. All the defilements, all the corruption of the mind, all the aversion, greed, jealousy, all come through the contact. So this contact keep on, oppress us constantly, because unless we fall asleep, the moment we awake, our sixth sense door start to open to the sixth sense object, and the contact keep on imprints us. And all these creatures, the flay cow was bitten, was nibbled by the creatures, different type of creatures. So these creatures refer to the defilements creatures. All the defilements, corruption of the mind keep on attacking us through our sixth sense door. This is what Buddha said. So when the nutriment concept is fully understood, the three kinds of feeling are fully understood. Because dependent on contact, feeling arises. When the agreeable object contact to the eye, then pleasant feeling. When the disagreeable object contact to the eye, unpleasant feeling. So when the neutral object contact to the eye, then neutral feeling. So when you understand a contact, then you understand three types of feelings. And when the three types of feelings are fully understood, I say there is nothing further that a noble disciple needs to do. It means that this disciple has attained Arahant state. So by understanding context, you understand feeling. When you understand feeling, you can attain arahantship. How? So first you must understand mind and body, mind and matter. Huh? What is matter in this sense? Any object, external object, whether sound, form, smell, taste, bodily touch, all these are called matter. When they impinge the sixth sense door, eye sensitivity, ear sensitivity, all these are also matter. So when there's impingement, there's contact. Contact is mental aggregate, mental mind. Then feeling arises, then craving arises, all these are mind. So you understand mind and body, mind and matter. Then after understanding already, you have to apply three characteristics: anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanence, suffering and non-self, to each contact, to each feeling, to each craving. Now whatever contact arises, you contemplate as impermanent, suffering, non-self. Whatever feeling arises, you contemplate as impermanent, suffering, non-self. If you keep on doing in such a way, you will reach a state we call disenchantment. We call nibbidhanyana. Disenchantment. You no more delight in the context. You no more delight in the feelings. You no more delight in whatever comes to your body and mind. Then, if you carry on in this way, finally you reach arahantship. That's what Buddha said. Okay? Now we come to the third one. And how bhikkhus should the nutriment mental volition be seen? Mental volition, manno sanketana. Suppose there's a charcoal pit, deeper than a man's height, filled with glowing coals without flame or smoke. A man would come along wanting to live, not wanting to die, desiring happiness and averse to suffering. Then two strong men would grab him by both arms and drag him towards the charcoal pit. The man's volition would be to get far away. His longing would be to get far away. His wish would be to get far away from the charcoal pit. For what reason? Because he knows, I will fall into this charcoal pit, and on that account, I will meet death or deadly suffering. It is in such a way, because that I say, the nutriment mental volition should be seen. Here was the nutriment mental volition. The two men, the two strong men, is the two karma. The karma, one wholesome karma, one unwholesome karma. So the two strong men would grab him, to grab this person. This person is worthy, ordinary person, by both arms and drag him towards the charcoal pit. What is this charcoal pit? This charcoal pit refers to round of existence in the three planes. We have three planes of existence. Sensual plane, including four woeful states and six deva realms. And we have five material planes, including all the Brahma who attain jhana. Then we have immaterial plane, for those who have attained immaterial jhana, who were born there. So in this realm of existence, we have three planes. Sensual planes, fine material planes, and immaterial planes. So this refers to the charcoal pit, equal to charcoal pit. So the two strong men refer to karma, unwholesome karma and wholesome karma. So unwholesome karma and wholesome karma drag us to the realm of existence. Okay. When the nutriment mental volition, how the karma drag us to the realm of existence, whatever karma we perform, it leaves behind karmic energy. This karmic energy will follow the mind and body. Will follow the stream of mind and body of that person. So when mixed with favorable conditions, and this karma will bear its result. When there is result, then in the round of existence, this person will suffer a lot from the past bad karma, our bad karma. So in the round of existence, we suffer a lot from our bad self, our separation from our beloved one, and we cannot get what we want, and so on. So as long as this round of rebirth, then the suffering follows because of our past karma, whether good or bad. Okay. Then in such a way, we could say the nutriment mental volition should be seen. When the nutriment mental volition is fully understood, the three kinds of craving are fully understood. When the three kinds of craving are fully understood, I say there is nothing further that a noble disciple needs to do. Okay. The three kinds of craving are the root of mental volition. What are the three kinds of craving? Can you tell me? I know your study or the sutta. What are the three kinds of craving? You know? What are the three kinds of craving? Craving is the origin of the truth of suffering. So we must understand what are the craving we have. Okay, number one is craving for sense pleasure. Craving for a sixth sense pleasure. Craving for visible form, for the sound, for the smell, for the taste, for the bodily part, and for the mental object. Because of craving for this sixth sense object, then we perform karma. For example, you're craving for the visible form. You crave for a beautiful woman. Then you got to perform karma in order to get her. So once karma performed, this we have karmic energy. When karmic energy ripens, then we bear the result. We bear the vipaka result. So this is called craving for six sense objects. Number two, craving for existence. We want to live continuously. So we perform next life. We hope next life. We want the life to be continued. So we perform karma. Let's say we perform good karma. While performing good karma, you pray. Oh, by this karma, may I be reborn as wealthy man in my future life. Or may I reborn in America. Or may I reborn may I reborn in heaven, and so on. So because of craving for existence, craving for life, then you perform some wholesome karma in order to get a new life again. But once life starts, there is aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. We cannot get what we want, separation from our beloved one. We have so many suffering waiting for us once the rebirth occurs. That's why we say that the two strong men would grab us by both arms and drag us towards the charcoal pit. Charcoal pit is burning, so we are burned by aging, sickness, death, lamentation, sorrow, and so on. Number third craving is called craving for non-existence. This craving for non-existence is associated with wrong view of annihilation. People believe that after this life, nothing exists. When death occurs, Then after that, no more future birth. This is called craving for annihilation, associated with wrong view of annihilation. So if a person believes that after death, nothing exists, then this person will not afflict of performing all bad karma, because they don't have to pay for it. After death, no more. So we don't have to pay for it. Then this person will continue accumulating all the bad unwholesome karma. But sometimes, view is something very dangerous. If you hold on to this view, but after that, this person reappear in the hell, then it's too late already. Because of the wrong view, he performed that karma. But the view, it doesn't, thing occur does not depend on our view. I believe there's no rebirth, but after that, I feel myself reappear in the hell. So things happen not according to our view. Things happen according to the nature, the law of the nature itself. So wrong view is very, very dangerous. If you have the wrong view, then you follow the wrong view, then you are bound to meet with a lot of suffering, either in this life or in your future life. So many Americans, they do not believe in the future life, or they believe in the future life, or they do not believe in the past life. Sometimes things happen not according to whether you believe it or not. The nature, the law of nature will operate continuously, despite whether you believe it or not. So it's better to keep the mind open. Keep the mind open. Don't say no, only this view, or only I believe this view. Yes, you can, but better on you find that you end up yourself in more suffering state. So keep the mind open. Believe more in the law of nature. Okay. So why the Buddha say this charcoal pit, the round of existence is equal to the charcoal pit burning? I'd like to give a story of Patachara. Patachara, during Buddha's time, she was a daughter of very wealthy family, and her father want her to marry with another wealthy family's son, but she fell in love with the worker in her house. She fell in love with the worker in her house, and she's so afraid her father will punish her. So two of them ran away. Then after 1 or 2 years, then she got pregnant. So according to Indian tradition, when a woman got pregnant and want to give birth, this woman should go back to her parents' house to give birth, according to Indian tradition. So she told her husband, I have to go back to my parents' house. But her husband very afraid that her wife's parents would punish him by taking away their daughter. So her husband said, no, you shouldn't go back home. But this lady go back home secretly. But on halfway, before she reached her parents' house, she gave birth to a boy. Then her husband came and met her on her way, then bring her back to the house. Then second time, when she was pregnant again, she told her husband she wanted to go back to her house, but her husband did not give her permission. So she brought her one boy and go back home secretly again. And when her husband went after her and caught her on the way back to her house. At that time, they had very heavy storm, heavy rain, heavy rain and heavy storm. Then, at that time she's going to give birth already. So her husband quickly go and fetch something to help her, to help his wife. But unfortunately, her husband was bitten by a poisonous snake. I think by a poisonous snake, or hit by the thunder. I forgot which one. I think hit by the thunder and dead and died. Mm-hmm. And this lady, you know, waiting for her husband to come back to help her, you know, is in misery. But anyhow, finally she gives birth to another. She gives birth. Then later on, she tried to find her husband and only found a goat. She was so sad. And after, then she cannot go back to her husband's house anymore. So she brought her two kids to her parents' house. So because of the heavy rain, the river is overflow and the current is so swift. In order to cross that current, she cannot carry both kids. So she put one kid on this shore and brought the newly born child, carried the newly born child and across the river. So when she crossed the river, she put her newly born child on the other shore, then come back to this shore in order to take the second child. So while she was in the middle of the river, there was an eagle flying in the sky. Thought there was a piece of flesh on the ground. So the eagle came down and took the flesh, the baby, and fly away. And when the mother saw, she was so frightened and she screamed. She screamed. And the son who waited at the other bank heard her mother's scream. And he thought his mother was calling him. So he ran to the river and was swept away by the current. So this mother lost her beloved husband and the two kids. Then she went back, what to do? So she went back. She continued her journey. Of course, she was very sick. And she continued her journey to her parents' house. So on the way, she met with one friend. She met with a person who come from the same town, her native town. Then she asked this man, how about my parents? And this man told her, last night because of the storm, heavy rain, then and the house of your parents was on fire. Maybe the thunder, hit something, then the house was on fire. All your parents, your brothers are burned by the fire. So in the same day, she lost all her relatives, all her beloved son, her husband, including all her parents and brothers. She can't stand this suffering. That is suffering too much for her. Then she went mad. She went mad immediately. So this how, the round of rebirth, the round of existence. Buddha referred the round of existence to charcoal pit. We are burning in this round of existence by so many incidents. Okay. And another story I would like to share with you, which I like very much, is that during Buddha's time, this lady was married with a businessman. And when this businessman went out for his business, at the time this lady was pregnant. but they do not know. Only after her husband left for some time, then she discovered that she was pregnant already. But her husband's parents think no. Because after my son left, only you said you got pregnant. So it cannot be my son. So they test, you know, they ask her to leave. They ask this lady to leave the house. So this lady, with her pregnancy, and after finally she gave a birth, and begging the food. Begging the food with her kid. Then one day, she met with a gang of robbers, the bandits. And the head of the robbers fall in love with her and married her. But the son was left. She only picked the lady without taking her son together. Then this lady married with the she married with the robber. Then gives birth to a daughter. Gives birth to a daughter. But one day, this lady quarrelled with her husband, and this lady left the husband alone. So for many years, then after that, she met with a young man. This lady met with a young man, and this young man fell in love with her and took her as wife. But this man, young man, has already one wife, so takes her as a second wife, the older lady as a second wife. So these two wives, they stay harmony, they stay in harmony. One day, the elder wife tried to comb the youngest wife's hair, then discovered there was a scar on her head, Then she asked her, you know, where is your family, you know, where. She asked all the discourse. And she was so shocked to find out this younger wife was her daughter. Because she left the husband for so many years. And she's so shocked to find out this younger wife was her husband. Then she's so shocked and still very sinful also, you know. Then she asked this younger wife again how she met with her husband. And the younger wife told all the details. Then finally she find out her husband was her son. So when she know all these things, you know, two mother and daughter married with the son, with her own son. She was so disgusted, you know, so shameful, so disgusted about all this happening, you know. She immediately left the house, you know, being disgusted by all this happening. She immediately left her house and become a bhikkhuni. And finally, I think she attained arahantship. So the round of existence, is full of suffering, not full of disgust. So Buddha say that the round of suffering is just like the charcoal pit. We are burning by our lust, burning by our greed, and burning by our own delusion. Okay. So when an increment mental volition, so this mental volition means all the karma, wholesome karma and unwholesome karma. So when the increment mental volition is fully understood, the three kinds of craving are fully understood. Because craving is the root for all our actions. Craving is the root for all our wholesome and unwholesome actions. So when you understand the nutriment of mental volition, you understand three types of craving. When the three kinds of craving are fully understood I say, there is nothing further that a noble disciple need to do. That this person has become arahant, so nothing else to be done. The next one, and how, bhikkhus, should the nutriment consciousness be seen? Suppose they were to arrest a bandit, a criminal, and bring him before the king, saying, "Sir, this man is a bandit, a criminal. Impose on him whatever punishment you wish." The king says to them, "Go, men. In the morning, strike this man with 100 spears. In the morning, they strike him with 100 spears. Then, at noon, the king asks, "Men, how is that man still alive, sir?" "Then go, and at noon, strike him with 100 spears. At noon, they strike him with 100 spears. Then, in the evening, the king asks, "Men, how is that man still alive, sir?" "Then go, and in the evening, strike him with 100 spears. In the evening, they strike him with 100 spears. What do you think, bhikkhus? Would that man, being struck with 300 spears, experience pain and displeasure on that account?" Venerable sir, even if he were struck with 1 spear, he would experience pain and displeasure on that account, not to speak of 300 spears. It is in such a way, bhikkhus, that I say the nutriment consciousness should be seen. Okay. What is this the king? What is the king? Metaphor, huh? The Buddha said the king who punished the criminals. This king refers to the king of karma. The king of the karma. And the 300 spears refer to the consciousness. Consciousness. And the pain, the man has to endure when struck by the 300 spears is the pain in the realm of existence also. For example, when the consciousness, when there's a craving, when there's a craving for edible food, then consciousness takes a hole, takes a foothold, and consciousness takes a hole and arises, increases. When consciousness arises, according to dependent origination, when consciousness arises, then mind and body arise. When consciousness arises, mind and body arise. When mind and body arise, then six sense spaces. When six sense spaces arise, contact arises. When contact arises, feeling arise. When feeling arise, craving arises. When craving arises, clinging. When clinging arises, becoming. Becoming, what's becoming? Becoming means karmic formation. All the karmic activities. Now we call becoming bhava. So all the karmic activity arise. So one a person would perform because of clinging. Clinging is intense craving. It reaches to an extent you cannot let go. You want it. So you have to perform wholesome and unwholesome karma in order to satisfy your own clinging. So once karma are performed, it leads to birth again, a new birth. So Buddha said, when there's craving for edible food, when there's craving for contact, when there's craving for mental volitions, then consciousness takes a hold. When consciousness takes a hold, then the consciousness increases. When there's arising of consciousness, then mind and body arise. When there's mind and body, the mind and body will perform a lot of karma activities that bring to the arising of renewed existence. So when there's renewed existence in a round of rebirth, there's a lot of suffering. I have just now these two stories to tell you how suffering comes when there's birth. So many unexpected suffering can come. We have to encounter them because of our past karma. But when if there's no rebirth, if there's no rebirth, all our karma find no foothold to ripen. There's no base, there's no rebirth. Then our karma cannot find. There's no base for the old karma to ripen. So when there's consciousness, there's mind and body. When there's mind and body, there's karmic activity. When there's karmic activity, there's renewed existence. When there's renewed existence, all our past karma find a base to spring up. Then we have to suffer according to our past karma. So that's why Buddha said, this consciousness is like a 300 spears. We are struck, even 100 causal must turn, not to say 300 spears. One in the morning, one in the afternoon, one in the evening. Okay. So when the nutriment consciousness is fully understood, name and form, or mind and body, is fully understood. Because when the consciousness arises, depend on the consciousness, mind and body. That's why Buddha says, when the nutriment consciousness is fully understood, mind and body, name and form is fully understood. When name and form is fully understood, I say, there's nothing further that a noble disciple needs to do. So according to dependent origination, when name and form is fully understood, dependent on name and form, six sense spaces, depend on the six sense spaces, contact, depend on the contact, feelings, depend on the feeling, craving, depend on the craving, clinging, depend on the clinging, becoming, depend on the becoming, birth, depend on the birth, there's urging, sickness, death, lamentation, sorrow, pain, grief, despair, thus arise the whole mess of suffering. So, but when the name, when the consciousness ceases, when the consciousness ceases, then no more name and form. When there's no name and form, no mind and matter, there's no six sense spaces. When there's no six sense spaces, there's no contact. When there's no contact, no feeling. When there's no feeling, no craving. When there's no craving, no clinging. When there's no clinging, no karma performed. Because no clinging, so no karma performed. When there's no karma performed, there's no more birth. When there's no birth, there's no aging, no sickness, no death. No sorrow, no lamentation, no pain, no grief, no despair. Thus comes the wholeness of the suffering come to cessation. That's why Buddha said, when name and form is fully understood, I say, there's nothing further that a noble disciple needs to do. He has attained arahantship. So nothing else to be done for him. So this is called the four nutriments. What are the four? Number one, edible food. Edible food to sustain our body. And when our body are well fed, then the last four, another five sense of that increase, then we involve in karmic activity that lead to rebirth. Okay, this is called edible food. The second one, do you remember? Contact. Contact. When there's contact, there's feeling. When there's feeling, there's craving, clinging, and so on. We are, our six senses are always exposed to the six types of contact. When there's contactless feeling, okay? And many people, we die for pleasant feeling. We are chasing after all the pleasant feeling. that leads to craving, and craving is the origin of all suffering. It's the second noble truth. Okay. The third nutriment is what? Mental volition. Mano sanketana. Volition. Volition means karma. Karma is wholesome karma and unwholesome karma. Even wholesome karma, even we perform wholesome karma, we are also extending our round of rebirth. Whether unwholesome or wholesome, once karma performed, the karma rooted in ignorance and craving, then we are extending the round of rebirth. So that's why karma or mental volition is also called nutriment. And the fourth one is Jnana, consciousness. When there's consciousness, mind and body. When there's mind and body, then the whole dependent origination continues. So these four nutriments, the Buddha says, these four nutriments for the maintenance of beings. For the maintenance of beings that have already come to be. And for the existence of those about to come to be. And if we can let go, detach from these four nutriments by way of vipassana, contemplate all this as impermanent, suffering non-self. So, gradually we will reach a state that all this is, then we attain the final liberation of Arahant state. Okay, this is my explanation of this sutta, the sunless. It's very profound sutta, and you may reflect it often, to stop the flow of our mental defilement. Okay, so I should stop here. Any questions? Is it too difficult for you? No, not difficult. You, because you're new.
Wow. So we don't want to have other lives.
Yes, because when there's life, there's suffering. I think.
Yeah.
When there's life, there's aging, sickness, death. You know, that is inevitable. And separation from the beloved one, you know, then cannot get what we want. There's so many suffering a week, then there's birth. That's why in the teaching of the Buddha, we do not have any more life. So we work for them. We work. We practice vipassana in order to see things as they really are, to get rid of our attachment towards life. But in the same way, it's not passive. In the same way, we also help other people. We are not working on it alone, you know. We say goodbye, then we go alone. Other people left. Let other people suffer all by themselves. No. So Buddha appeared in this world because of two reasons. Buddha appeared in this world out of compassion for all sentient beings. So that's why he taught the way to escape from all suffering, which is noble evil path. Now he has done his duty. He already shown you a way, then he go already. He went for Parinibbana. He has no more rebirth. Because he has taught what to be taught already. It is for us now whether we want to follow his path or not. Okay.
Practicing in a way, two things ask is it. Can you explain for two, how are they related? How can you compare those two?
One is seeking as they really are, another one is what?
So when you practice this, when you practice walking, you talk about investigating. Who is walking? But then when you talk about breathing as a practice, concentration, and then feeling the space, the way it is, to me it's
two. Actually, it's one thing. Investigation, when you investigate, you come to conclusion. Then you come to realize. Then you come to see things as they really are. Through investigation, you know. For example, when you walk in, I say, you know, if your concentration, mindfulness, and wisdom are strong, then you only see the movement, which is wind element. So you only see movement. You do not see a person. You only see movement. So then you ask yourself, who is walking? You know, who is walking? So when your concentration becomes deep, your wisdom becomes sharp, then you only see movement. So only movement, only wind carry the body. So by investigation, who is walking, then you see things as they really are, only wind element. So only two is the same thing, you know. First investigate, then you only understand things as they really are. Then you investigate your mind. Who knows walking? Who knows? Who? So you investigate. Oh, consciousness knows the walking. Consciousness cannot arise alone. It must accompany it with contact, feeling, perception, formation, and so on. So then you study your mental aggregate, then you come to conclusion, only mind. And mind is not I. Not I, not mind, not myself. Mind is not a self. No? Mind is mental factors, has its own functions to perform. For example, feeling experience the object. Then perception perceives the quality of the object. So each mental factors has their own function to perform. They are not a person, they are not a being, not a self. So you come by investigation, you come to conclusion, and you come to see things as they really are. Okay?
So one is the practice, the other is the thought.
Right.
Could you think of reincarnation as you have another chance to learn what you need to learn, and if you don't get it, then you come back and have to try it again?
Yes, sure.
Okay.
Yes. And sometimes, even though we don't want to have new life, but we still have to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the ignorance and the craving has not been completely uprooted yet. So although you know, you make a wish, no, I don't want to have any life anymore. But the latent definements, the dormant definements, the two root cause, ignorance and the craving, are not been uprooted completely. We still have new life to go. We still have to take rebirth, whether we like it or not.
Because as long as you have the craving, then you have the karma, and that has to work.
Right. You are receptive.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
If no one has a question, I have a question.
It's okay, no problem. You can ask.
In Western psychology, there's something what they call polarity.
What's priority?
Meaning, there's a lot of parts of us, like, there are parts of us want to eat healthy, but there's another part of us that doesn't want to eat healthy food. There are many, many parts of us. In Buddhism, is that what you're saying, that the mind sees the mind?
The mind sees the mind.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate some more? The mind sees the mind.
Like this morning, earlier you were talking about investigating. It's investigating what's going on with the body, with the action, with the process.
Yes.
So in a way, it's something.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So, would you say that
is
equivalent to that sense?
I could say that, for example, like taking healthy food. You know, one side say we should take healthy food, but another side craving say no, I want only to eat delicious, tasty food, despite whether it's healthy or not. So our, you know, maybe the norm is told us, you know, we should eat healthy food, but the craving says no, you should eat tasty food. I think if this is what you mean, then it's true, because we have keep on, you know, it's a person who has knowledge, so this knowledge keep on fighting with the craving. But if a person has no knowledge, then he lives. He follow his craving only. There's no conflict at all. He just lives, follow his craving, no conflict. But if he has the knowledge, you know, he know this is not good for me, but craving cannot, he cannot win over the craving. So he still takes the unhealthy food, you know, or the tasty food. So there's conflict. It's true. So it depends on whether a person has knowledge or not. Craving we all have, but knowledge we may not have.
So it's easier not to have the knowledge.
then you suffer even more. And people suffer don't even know,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Only come to the end, oh my God, too late.
Yeah.
So it's good to have knowledge first. Let knowledge fight with craving.
Further down to that, knowledge, and then practice translates into practice.
The practice will change the craving. Yes. Finally, we conquer the craving. But it takes long time. If your practice is continuous, then it's more easy. But if your practice is not continuous, then very difficult to fight with craving. No, the Buddha said, the samsara, no, the round of rebirth. There's no beginning. You cannot find the beginning. So long, long, long time already. Until now, we're still here. Sitting here facing each other. It's just that, you know, craving is so difficult to abandon. It's so difficult to eradicate. So it's not easy to fight with craving.
Yes. It sounds from the text, it sounds easy though. The practice is hard. Because it says that if we understand the concept, then we understand spirit, then we will be disenchanted. So how that happens, disenchanted by this understanding?
Just now I told already, you didn't get it. When you keep on discerning, for example, contact, so many contact from a sixth sense door, keep on contact, keep on invade our sixth sense door. So many different types of feeling arise. So if you can discern your feelings, then you will see feeling arise, pass away, arise, pass away. Arising, passing away, arising, passing away. When the good feeling, when a good feeling arises, you feel good. When the good feeling passes away, the good feeling becomes painful. When the good feeling passes away, it becomes painful. And when a painful feeling arises, it itself is painful. When a painful feeling passes away, it becomes good feeling again. So the feeling keep on arising, changing according to cause and effect. So if you can see feeling arise, pass away, arise, pass away, arise, pass away, you feel the oppression. You feel suffering because things keep on changing. It's beyond your control. Things which is beyond your control, you have no delight in it. When you have no delight in it, it's called disenchantment. When you have disenchantment, you become dispassionate. No more grit for it. No more lust for the feeling. No lust for present feeling anymore. Why? Because you know soon it will pass away. So then you become disenchanted. Then it's finally you reach liberation. It's very easy. And Buddha say, and sometimes when you read the sutta, he say it's so quick this person become arahant, this person become anagami, because those person have practiced in their past life. Their mind already matured, very matured to receive the precise teaching of the Buddha. If not, let's say you yourself read this sutta, Sanskrit. You say that when the nutriment is understood, the five sense pressure is understood. What are they? Don't understand at all. You can't understand because our wisdom is not sharp to understand what Buddha says. This only to those who have sharp wisdom. Even without commentaries, explanation, they can understand on the spot. But we cannot. So sometimes depends on certain person is very easy because they have been practicing many lifetimes in their past life. So to this type of person it's easy. So to those who are enjoying sensual pleasures in their past life, now come to this profound teaching, it becomes so difficult. Okay. No more question. Okay, last question for you. Okay.
Go ahead.
Going
back to that path that I was talking about, the knowledge transfer from knowledge to practice.
Okay.
Would you recommend for a beginner, a practitioner who started, that they have this craving? One thing is to remove the stimuli that surrounding them so that sixth sense of them wouldn't attract them, stimuli that craving.
How to remove?
Well, also, it's more simple.
Your sixth law, in fact, how to remove?
No, what I mean is, strategically, let's say you really like chocolate. So you would not even walk close to the chocolate aisle in the store. I'm talking about beginners.
Okay.
And then the other thing is switching thoughts.
Yes.
Distraction.
Okay.
Yes. So you don't continue telling the story about chocolate.
Yes.
Which
good. For beginners, yes. Don't see the chocolate. Don't hear about chocolate. Try to avoid seeing the chocolate. Yes, for beginners. But I'd like to give you another way for advanced meditators. I tell you my own experience. When I was in Connecticut, my devotees offer me a kiss. I never eat kiss before, you know, it's Western food, you know. So when I eat this kiss, oh, very delicious. And I forgot to contemplate impermanence. I forgot to, sometimes not mindful. Only Arahant can be mindful all the time. You know, Arahant, so sometimes that's of mindfulness. So I forgot to contemplate impermanence of my, of the taste and of the feelings and of my craving. And because I forget to contemplate impermanence, I think the taste is permanent. The kiss gives me the same pleasant feeling, I think. It's a permanent pleasant feeling. So when I go to Michigan, I ask, oh, kiss. Because I think the taste is permanent and it gives me pleasant feeling, you know. So I, because of lack of mindfulness, then I ask kiss. So when I eat the kiss, I say, eh, it's not the same, you know. It's not the same taste as I tasted before, you know. Then I eat the kind, eh, not the same, you know, I don't like the kiss, you know. But I still forgot the taste is impermanent. So when I come here, I ask her to buy cake for me. And she offered me 2 days already in the breakfast. I eat again. Not a taste which I tasted before. From that, I start to realize, actually, the taste already passed away long time already. It never the same for the second time. It is my perception. My wrong perception thinks the taste is the same. The taste gives me pleasant feeling. I'm clinging to that wrong perception. You know? So I, because every time I cling to that wrong perception, every time I try, hey, why cannot give me the same pleasant feeling? Why cannot? Finally, I come to realize, actually the taste already impermanent. You know, what I'm looking for, the I'm looking for the old pleasant feeling which I have. But that old pleasant feeling is already passed away. Because I forgot to note, I forgot to contemplate impermanence. So I was tricked by my mind. So from this, once this realization come to me, my longing, my craving for the kiss go away completely. So now kiss in front of me, I have no more desire for it. This is how we can, you know, your way is good for beginner, but a lot of suffering. You got to be not concerned, not to see the chocolate, not to hear the chocolate. No? Yeah. If you can practice the way, now I tell you, you can get it off the chocolate completely. No more desire for it. Like, no more desire for kids. And only this for advanced meditator. Only advanced meditator can recognize this one. So, actually, you know, when we eat the food, you know, sometimes the food devoured the eater. We devour the food, but the food also devours the eater if we eat without mindfulness. So if you really want to get it of your craving to certain object, either food or, you know, visible object or sound or music, somebody has so strong attachment to the music, you know. So you've got to contemplate as impermanent. First you remember, you memorize mindfulness, that pleasant feeling, you remember that pleasant feeling, then you contemplate that pleasant feeling as impermanent. Then next time when you taste again, you will feel that, you will see that pleasant feeling never come back again. Not the same pleasant feeling, no more come back, not coming back anymore. Actually we are shifted by our old perception that everything is permanent. Everything gives us happiness. So we are treated by our old perception, our wrong perception. So when I realize this one, I feel so happy, you know. It's a grow of my wisdom. I feel so happy, you know. I have not only a grip of the craving for the kiss, I understanding how I am, how human beings are treated by their old perception. Okay? Enough for today. Thank you.